Did you by any chance push a mute button?
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay.
That's, yeah. Turns out when you push the mute button, we can't hear you.
Software mute, yes. Okay.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 201 for Friday, November 20th, 2009. On today's show, we look at the launches of Modern Warfare 2 and Left 4 Dead 2, examine the contents of BioShock 2 Special Edition, gawk at Star Trek Online trailers, get surprised by some demigod statistics from Stardock, and take a good news, bad news glimpse into the future of PC gaming. Hi, everyone. I'm your host and PC Gamer's Reviews Editor, Dan Stapleton. And with me today are our Associate Editor, Evan Lottie.
Hello.
Our intern, Eric Belsas.
Hi, guys.
Our producer, Andy Bauman.
Good to be here. Thanks, Dan.
And today's voice from PC Gamer's past is our former executive intern and current editor, online editor for MaximumPC.com, Norman Chan.
Whoa, you guys are much more civilized than we are.
We haven't sworn at anybody yet, and we got through the whole intro without cursing.
It's pretty amazing.
I know, I'm sure we'll find some excuse to make Andy earn his spot on the podcast by bleeping us.
Excellent.
In the minutes and hour or so to come. I guess the big news yesterday, which is sort of tangentially PC gaming related, was that Google finally showed off the Chrome OS, and Norma, you were watching that closely. Is that going to have any impact on PC gamers?
Not at all. Not whatsoever.
Ignore it, is what you say.
Completely ignore it unless you plan on buying a notebook in the next, after a year, in 18 months, 12 right. months. I don't give specific dates. They didn't say anything.
Right, because you can't even install it on a netbook you buy today, right?
They did say that, existing netbooks, if the hardware is compatible, you might have to do some tinkering and that might work. But it's being developed with hardware, specific hardware in mind, to be released in a year.
Right. And it's like the idea is for it to be like a super fast boot up internet browsing OS that you can also use Google Docs and email and stuff on. So yeah. Guess in theory, you could play a bunch of Flash games on it.
You could totally play Flash games. They demoed it. Flashworks, they had YouTube running on it. Whether that's accelerated, not sure, probably not, because Flash now, the newest version of Flash has some graphic acceleration, GPU acceleration, but they did have, chess, so chess is a PC game.
Right, well, it is a game played on a device that is PC hardware, so, it is technically PC gaming, it's light PC gaming, so you won't not be able to play any games on it. It's not really the kind of stuff we're interested in. The kind of stuff we are interested in are big launches like Modern Warfare 2 and Left 4 Dead 2, which we would have talked about last week, except it was a little bit too fantastic in here for that. So now we're getting around to it. I guess just last night, a bunch of us were playing some Left 4 Dead 2. So we've got some good discussion on that. I know like the highlight for all of us has been the scavenge mode.
Mm-hmm.
Norm and Evan hit us with your impressions of why scavenge mode is awesome.
Well, I mean, first of all, in terms of just raw mechanics, right? You're not going from point A to point B in the same way versus or campaign does. You're not covering a set area like survival. It's zombie tennis, right? Like the scoring system, it's sort of frame based in the same way tennis is. Like you have to win a frame and then, you get points, and by having more points, you win that frame, and you have to win two of the three frames to win the game. And I mean, just in general, I mean, if you're not familiar with it, there's a generator or a vehicle in some cases that you have to pour gas cans into on the map. And each time you successfully pour a gas can into the vehicle or the generator, it increases the amount of time you have left, on the map.
And scores a point.
And, when that time runs out and you're not holding a gas can in your hand, you switch sides and the other team has an opportunity to score more than you. But just in general, I mean, the way the cans are spaced out and they're not randomly placed, but they're scattered well enough that like it just puts the game mechanics in motion, right? Like it's kind of what Left 4 Dead wanted to be in the first iteration, I feel like, in that you're constantly moving, thinking on the fly, you know, just faced with all these challenges, and not really. It's much more difficult to develop like very explicit tactics that you can successfully carry out as survivors or the zombies, I guess.
There's still some planning. It's less cookie cutter than versus mode, but I would also say it also removes the zombie aspect from it, because it's at the anti survival mode. You're not saving your pills. There's no saving health packs. You're going to use your pipe bombs as soon as you get them. It's Counter-Strike, but it's happened to have zombies and boss infected.
Yeah, so does this take place in the framework of versus mode? Like, there are other players on the other side?
Oh yeah, yes, there are two teams. Yes, yeah.
Ah, excellent.
It's 4-4, yeah.
One team is survivors, and then the other team, or the survivors are trying to bring back the gas cans, and this infected are trying to not necessarily kill the survivors, but just stop them, slow them down, and prevent
exactly.
them.
Exactly, so all the lessons you learn from Left 4 Dead versus and co-op, where you know you can never leave anyone behind if someone's down. That doesn't necessarily apply in scavenge. Someone could be down, but that could be part of the plan if you're distracting and infected, and all you need is that one last can. It's different. Your mindset is different.
It's a different pace of gameplay, I find, than campaign mode, because you're not necessarily trying to stay alive. You're trying to score more points. You're trying to do it as quickly as possible. Rather than you know, you don't really have the option to go slowly and carefully.
Mm-hmm. I mean, kind of an alternate title for the mode might be like hunting and gathering. I mean, the infected are hunting, the survivors are gathering, and I just love those moments where, it develops in such an impromptu way. Usually, like there's a mall level if you've reached the end of the Dead Center campaign. That's one of the survival maps, and there's multiple floors, and the gas cans are on those floors, and we'll get in situations where, you know, Norm has to throw the gas cans down to the bottom floor, and we have to catch them, but we have to keep them out of danger because, you know, if the spitter spits on them, it can destroy a gas can, then we lose that point, and it's just very organic compared to how predictable versus got for me, I think.
Are there a lot of moments where you accidentally shoot the gas can?
Yeah, that happened to me last night. I accidentally shot the gas can.
Dan, you are the weakest link.
Oh,
ouch. But we did win that round.
We won, yes. Yeah.
I mean, gas cans are in some situations more valuable than your teammates, but they can be used for like defensive situations. Like if two or three people are just absolutely surrounded by, you know, are incapacitated or something, or you need to get them out of trouble, and just throw a gas can there in desperation, I guess you could.
And destroy it to light set them all on fire. Yeah.
Yes.
Although that does hurt your teammates too. So it's
really?
It is not without consequence.
Now, were you guys playing with people that you knew on both sides of the, or were you guys, can you do it kind of randomly? Can you just find a game?
So Left 4 Dead 2, the matchmaking is a little different. It's a refined version of Left 4 Dead 1. It still uses Steamworks.
Okay.
So you could play as a group. There is a team-based matchmaking, or there are public lobbies.
We haven't gotten that to work yet, have we?
No, we haven't gotten to work with our server.
Right. But so it's not.
It does work. You need four people to do a team-based matchmaking game.
Mm. Right. So basically, you create, you know, like it would be us four. You know, we'd set up a team, and then we push the matchmaking button to match us up with somebody else who has created a team of four. So you can play with your friends against a group of friends.
Can you play against the AI?
No, not in scavenge.
Okay. Well, the AI does replace players, but you have to have people on. Other team.
Teams have
you could do 1v1, I guess, scavenge with three AI on each team.
Okay. But there has to be at least one person on each time.
Yes. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Much like in versus.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I actually, since it came out, I haven't actually played through the campaign at all.
Well, it's because you've done it already.
Right. I did it once. I do want to go and do it again, but it hasn't been a priority for me, and there's so many things out right now.
Were you there when we played the co-op Realism mode?
That's when Dan's motherboard died that night.
Well, the motherboard, I'll get to that later, but yeah, I was having some computer issues. Then talking about the actual launch, did you guys think it went smoother this time than with Left 4 Dead 1? I mean, is Steam getting a little bit better about launches?
I think so.
Yeah.
Initial delay.
Yeah, there was an hour delay there where I guess they, at the last minute, they discovered a bug that they were trying to fix. And surprisingly, that was only an hour. But yeah, I really wish that Valve wouldn't announce like specific release hours if they are not absolutely certain they're going to make it. If they haven't, you know, tested everything to make sure it's going to work. Because there's really nothing more frustrating for me than for a lot of people. And the forums, went just absolutely ape-head when this happened. Like they people were sitting down, getting, you know, ready to play. On the East Coast, it was midnight for people. They sat down to play, unlock and play, and no, nothing for an over an hour. And that is like the worst hour of a gamer's life.
Yeah. Well, and there are a lot of guys in Britain waking up at 5 a.m.
It'd be nice if they would get, you know, make sure that all the ducks were in the row to avoid that frustration. And it's understandable. Nobody's perfect. It's understandable why this happens. God, it sucks.
Yeah. If you say 11, you know, maybe turn it on at 10:30. Try turning it on at 10:30. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been nice. But so the other big launch, which also involves Steam, was Modern Warfare 2. Which I guess that also went pretty smoothly, except that if you bought it from Steam, if you pre-ordered it on Steam and preloaded it and were all ready to play when on the official release date on the 10th, you could not. You could not play until the 12th, which was really, I mean, it took me by surprise. And it took a lot of other people by surprise too. Even though Steam, you know, they did not lie. They did not say this game will unlock on the 10th. They did have, in fact, on the store page that would unlock. All the advertising everywhere said the 10th. If you bought the game in the store, took it home, and, you know, since that game uses Steamworks as well, it requires you to log into Steam. If you took that store bought copy, you could play on the 10th. And that was a big slap in the face to a lot of, you know, loyal Steam customers who had pre-ordered with the intent of being able to play the moment the game was available anywhere. Now we did contact both Activision and Valve to ask, you know, what the heck happened here. Neither of them would comment on it, which means basically, without any official confirmation, I think we can go ahead and leap to the conclusion that this was a similar situation to what happened with Dawn of War 2, which was one of the first games to use Steamworks, third-party games to use Steamworks. GameStop, in particular, stopped taking pre-orders for Dawn of War 2 when I guess they figured out, and this was all stuff that they wouldn't confirm either, but they must have figured out that installing Dawn of War 2, like if you go to GameStop and bought either of these games, you install the game on your computer, and it installs basically a competitor's store on your computer. And they were, you know, kind of understandably not happy about that. So what this must have been was Activision and Valve.
Well, not must have been, but you're speculating.
Right. This is really the only explanation I can imagine for this to happen. That what has to have happened here is that Valve and Activision conceded to GameStop and other retailers who were angry about Steam being installed on every computer who bought the retail copy, and said, okay, to make this up to you, we won't unlock the game for digital copies, digitally purchased copies, until a couple days after the retail release. That's kind of a sneaky move.
Those bastards.
What do you guys think about that? Is that fair play? I mean, they did technically, they did not lie about it. They did have the real release date on their site. But I mean, is that an underhanded move?
Is this one of those conflict of interest things where, I mean, the technology they're using is basically a store? Is the same as the store?
I wouldn't call it a conflict of interest. Exactly.
Well, not necessarily. It's a byproduct of, you know.
Yeah, it is
what
a side
the situation
effect.
Is, sure. So, not that big of a deal. I mean, for GameSpot, if it's or GameSpot or
GameSpot,
not
GameStop. GameStop. I always get that. I always confuse this. Probably because they're anarchists.
If GameStop, if that really was the reason, then I don't think they should be that worried, because people really, if they're buying games from GameStop, that's what they're fixed on. They're not going to, you know, switch over to Steam, and people who buy from Steam aren't going to GameStop.
Well, and it could be like a lot of people that buy, you know, casually, might not even realize that Steam is an option,
You know, people that go into game and GameStop might not think about that. But you know, once you get Steam installed on their computers, and every time they launch Steam in order to launch Modern Warfare, it pops up and says, "Hey, we got 50% off on Crysis this week," or you know, whatever the new thing is. That's gonna lure them into Steam. It puts Steam's advertising on that computer. So I mean, I do understand why you know, retailers are angry about that. And it's the same reason that none of the other digital distribution outlets like Impulse or anybody else, Direct to Drive or anybody else, nobody would carry Modern Warfare 2 for that very same reason. They don't want to put their competitors' advertising in front of their customers.
So,
but it really did kind of screw over the loyal Steam customers, don't you think?
They certainly could have been clear about when it was coming out, but they didn't want to discourage pre-orders, I'm sure.
Although, by doing that, haven't they discouraged all future pre-orders through Steam?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, we've gotten some letters, some very angry letters from readers who say, I'm never pre-ordering a game off Steam again because I feel screwed by this. And I certainly understand that perspective. I would be really pissed off. And I know a lot of them canceled their pre-orders through Steam and then went to the store and bought it, which is exactly what, you know, what the retailers wanted.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that Valve messed up a little bit there by even accepting pre-orders, really. I think that was kind of underhanded on their part. Not completely deceptive, but not really treating their customers very well.
Either way, so more related to the user experience of the launch, have you guys heard about this rumor of Trojans being transmitted over IWNet?
No.
Whoa, really? I've not heard that.
I did see the rumor, but has anything been confirmed on it?
No, it's still a rumor. But I can definitely see how it could happen. I mean, with the peer-to-peer type connections where you know what ports have to be open, any host that was infected could easily transmit any file to any of the peers they're connected to.
Really? I mean, wouldn't there be like some kind of security? Like in theory, shouldn't there be some kind of security? Because I mean, there are lots of peer-to-peer games out there. I mean, like StarCraft, for example. Going all the way back, even before StarCraft, they've all been peer-to-peer, and I haven't heard anything about any malicious stuff being transmitted over Battle.net.
So I'm glad you asked that question. Actually, Valve's John McCaskey, who, if I'm correct, is the head of Steam, offered a thought on that, and he confirmed that is a possibility. I'm going to quote him from the Voodoo Extreme news article from 2 days ago here. This is total fear-mongering, is unrelated to having dedicated servers or not. I guess a lot of people are frustrated about that. He continues, anytime you have a network-enabled application accepting data from a remote host, dedicated or not, you have a risk of that the application code has bugs in it, allowing buffer overruns that hackers may exploit. These are the same type of vulnerabilities often found in patch in your operating system. But, he says, however, there's no evidence of any bugs or vulnerabilities of this kind in IWNet at this time.
Right. So that may be, you know, somebody who was angry about the lack of dedicated servers starting rumor. But it could also be substantiated. We just haven't seen anything yet.
And one thing that does seem to be substantiated, speaking of people that are frustrated about dedicated servers, is there's a mod in the wild that allows people to use console commands and, if I'm correct, host dedicated servers.
Have you seen? I did see something about that where somebody successfully managed to hack in like the ability to have a dedicated server using like basically digging out the code, which I guess they didn't take out of the engine after Modern Warfare 1.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that implemented. Have you guys seen it?
It was a pretty humorous video, actually. They basically set the gravity to zero, very low. I don't know if that would be one or zero. And they had sort of this deathmatch in multiplayer that kind of mirrored Tribes, where they'd float in the air and, you know, shoot grenade launchers and get 10,000 EXP for every kill. And so it kind of showed that the game was indeed vulnerable. I don't know if that's been patched yet. I don't know if I've gotten a patch on my game in the past few days.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't know if you'd call that a vulnerability, but it is capable of being modded despite Activision, Infinity Ward's best efforts, I guess would be the best way to put that. Mm-hmm. But I guess on the topic of IW.net, you guys, Evan and Norm, you've played a lot of the multiplayer so far, right?
Yeah. I mean, probably 15 hours or something. Yeah.
Yeah. What has been your experience with it? And is in your experience thus far, is the lack of dedicated servers a deal breaker, or is it just an inconvenience? Or
it is a very serious inconvenience.
Like in what ways?
Okay. For example, when I play, people got pissed off that the max number of players is, I think, 18 now instead of 18, 32.
Yeah. Right. Depends on the map. Yeah.
Depends on the map, but that 18 is actually only for one gameplay mode. The vast majority of the gameplay modes and maps, it's only 12 players. Yep. So it's really just 6-on-6. Yeah, only the ground war gameplay mode is 18. But that's the fun one, because you have a lot of people. And when you play, even when you play a 12-player game, it takes a while for them to fill up. And when people drop, it's the, like, 5 to 10 seconds of waiting. It's more like 10 seconds because.
But that's not when anybody drops. That's just when the.
When the host drops, you have to wait about 10 seconds for the game to resync, which breaks the immersion. And also, when you play it like late hours of the night or an unconventional hour, most likely you're going to be playing with people not in your time zone, and it gets very laggy.
It's a really noticeable step down for you.
Every gameplay session I've had, whether I've played with Evan or someone else, much profanity has been shouted in the name of lag causing death.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a game that accentuates that because the pace is incredibly high. I mean, split-second decisions and aiming and whatnot that really count in almost every circumstance. And as kind of devil's advocate, I would say that in terms of connecting the games and just getting multiplayer sessions going, it's been pretty smooth. Every time we've wanted to, right, Norm?
In terms of getting a game going, sure, it's pretty fast because that's probably because there's a lot of people playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
The way it works is when you're finding a game yourself, it tries to find games with people that are close to your skill level and it starts with lower ping. But most of the time, because you can tell, it's like it'll look for a game with under 50 ping, then under 60 ping, and under 70 ping. But most of the times when I play, it's in the 100 to 200 ping range.
Can you even see the pings? Isn't it?
You can't see it in game, but when it's finding a server, it'll tell you. You know, now it's looking for games. How many games match your preferences under 100 ping? How many under 200 ping? And very rarely have I seen it find a game to match what I want. Even if it's just my settings are just, I want to play, you know, headquarters. Most likely it's 100, 200 ping. And we're in a fairly populated area where you'd imagine there are a ton of people playing.
Right. Well, I guess there are a ton of people playing because Activision Infinity Ward has now said that, the PC version of Modern Warfare 2 has sold more copies already than Call of Duty 4 on PC sold. So apparently those numbers, I guess there are over a million copies of Call of Duty 4 on the PC. Yeah, over a million. Yeah.
At $60 each?
Yeah.
Well, didn't they also say that, so for them it's a huge win because they were saying with Modern Warfare 1, you know, the vast majority of people playing on PC online or single player were people who pirated the game.
Right. So, I mean, that's probably true. I mean, that's true of a lot of games. But yeah, I mean, if it sold more copies than Call of Duty 4 did, that means that, that the boycott was incredibly ineffective. Also,
we knew that was going to be true.
Yeah.
I mean, that's surprising.
Yeah. But I mean, less effective than I thought. I mean, I thought it would probably be around on par, especially with the, they're like maybe equal numbers. But I didn't expect it to go up. I thought that the outrage, over the dedicated servers would take, you know, a chunk out of the numbers. But apparently it hasn't, or maybe it did take a chunk out, but not, you know, the enthusiasm for it and the crowd that wasn't as upset about the, dedicated servers, overshadowed that.
Yeah, I mean, even taking that factor on the side, the servers and whether or not it's a true PC game, the design of it is helplessly addictive, at least for somebody like me. I mean, the game almost over rewards you, especially in those first few levels of the prestige mode. I mean, you're getting all these. You're getting. Eric and I were talking about this in the car the other day, but I mean, for basic kills, you can get EXP bonuses for killing somebody that's damaged your teammate. Help me remember these, Eric. I'm trying to remember.
So headshots are worth bonus points. revenge, killing someone who killed you is worth bonus points.
Mm-hmm. Killing somebody when you've died three times in a row.
Yes, coming back from a death streak, using your UAV, using helicopter, winning the round.
Using a throwing knife gets you bonus XP.
Capturing a point, helping someone capture a point. Every 10 seconds you've held the point gives you 10 points. Being the first person to help destroy the point. No.
It's just like, yeah, thanks for helping me out there, guys. I mean, there is hardcore mode, and that's honestly where I prefer to play, but it's like your screen is being imprinted with these, plus X experience points every few seconds. They're so overstimulating in a game that's all, and there's like icons, and it's funny when we were talking about this. They have this new system where you can assign ranks, and, you have these little like miniature banners. There's like a couple hundred of them you can choose from. So you effectively have like three call signs in the game, and it's just really overstimulating. I don't know.
So it really rewards the hell out of you for doing not much of it all.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it kind of makes those successful kills and good gameplay moments that are genuinely interesting and memorable. It just kind of quantifies them along with the rest of ones, the other hundreds of others that have already been.
Do you find that like diminishes the actual accomplishments?
For me, it's more of just like a visual thing that I'm not. I don't know. I mean.
It's like if I'm rewarded for using a throwing knife, it's like, oh, you're awesome, you used a throwing knife, and then you do something that's actually cool, and it says, oh, you're awesome, you did something that's actually, you did X.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of takes some of the thrill out of doing something that's actually cool.
And yeah, I mean, and that's absolutely like by the letter my issue with achievements in most circumstances. When there's a system in place that values things that the developer wants you to do or is asking you to do, over things that you want to do or things that come naturally to you or that are special to you in a game. But at the same time, it's not like we don't have like, oh my God, last night I did this amazing thing that, wasn't related to points or achievements. So,
All right. So here's a question for you. Do you think you will play this? You will play Modern Warfare 2 as much as you played Call of Duty 4?
Call of Duty 4, I think I played it to reach max level and then I didn't do the second go around. Did you play like extra maps, like user created maps on COD 4?
Yeah, I did.
I don't know how that's going to work out here, because that could be a big determining factor of how long I play.
Yeah, they don't allow that. They don't allow user-created maps in Call of Duty 4, at least until somebody hacks it in, huh?
Or until they sell them to you.
Well, I mean, those wouldn't be... Well, unless they start some setup where users can create maps and then Infinity Ward sells those to you.
That would be awesome.
I think... I think I inherently will play a little bit more because, at least in terms of multiplayer, because there are more perks and items and things like that. And that's kind of one of the basic reasons that I do like the multiplayer experience for is just because the weapons all operate kind of interestingly and you can modify them with the perks and, use different combinations and they're fun to shoot when it comes down to it, even if it's incredibly easy to kill people in that game. Developing a character class that's essentially like 100% stealth or a sniper class with claymores, like it's fun living out those roles and kind of building them yourselves.
Well, when you say you'll play more, do you think you'll play more than you already have or more than you played Call of Duty 4?
More than I played Call of Duty 4.
Wow, okay. So that's a pretty ringing endorsement. You played the hell out of that game.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't even dug into Spec Ops mode yet, and Eric was selling me on that today, so... Yeah,
So it sounds to me like you're saying that the pros of the new modes and new stuff, the bells and whistles they've added outweigh the cons of the no dedicated servers.
So far, I mean, it's completely fresh right now, and I could be totally wrong, and 15 more hours in just as easily. But so far, it's been exciting, and the maps are. You always refer to them as being circularly designed maps, and that's definitely the case.
It's a target, right? It's a big circle with two paths that go in the middle, or intersecting paths, like a big X.
But and Norm, for you too, it's even with the delays of
is it better?
Yeah, do the pros outweigh the cons?
I have 18 hours played on multiplayer, so far yes.
Wow.
I also find that I'm dying a lot more. Maybe that's just, 2 years later, I just suck. Yeah, I'd like to go back to Modern Warfare 1 and see how I remember that. Because the games, they look the same. Yeah. And I have fond memories of the first game.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, I haven't touched multiplayer yet. I'm only about halfway through the single player, which I guess doesn't put me very far. It only means I spent a few hours in. I don't know. I'm kind of bored by the single player. What do you guys think about the single player?
It gets better. I had the same feelings like the first 3 or 4 hours, but then the last like 2 hours are really good.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's very whack-a-mole. It's just like, you know, it looks nice. And like the story is okay. A little bit ridiculous, but okay. I really like Keith David's voice. His voice work is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But the gameplay itself, I'm just bored. I keep finding myself tapping out to see what interesting has come up on Dig lately.
What difficulty are you playing it on? Just curious.
Normal.
Okay.
I don't think it needs to get harder though.
No, it doesn't need to get harder. I agree.
Yeah, I find myself dying frequently because I kind of get bored and charge in ahead and get myself killed.
I was very frustrated by the Brazil levels.
Yeah, those are annoying because there are enemies coming at you from all sides.
Yeah, you just can't see them very well.
Right.
Well, partly because whenever you're damaged, even slightly, there's a mess of like strawberry preserves on your screen.
I know, right? And especially when you're trying to shoot somebody with the iron sights or the scope, it's no good. Like they should give you a little bit more control when you're getting shot.
Right. Yeah. So I'm hoping it does get a little bit better because so far I'm not that impressed. Although to be fair, like Call of Duty 4 wasn't really my cup of tea either.
Oh, really?
I had kind of the same impression of that. Though. It was a little bit too whack-a-mole. I mean, yeah. I played all the way through and I had a good time, but it didn't blow me away. I felt it was overhyped.
Well, you may be a little lukewarm against the rest of the campaign, but for some reason it kicked in for me. And my mixed feelings about the campaign are still there. Like, I'm not totally sold that it was this great game, but for some reason I am really satisfied with it, even though I spent $60 on it.
And for the record, now having played the No Russian level myself, I still don't like it at all.
I didn't shoot any civilians.
Yeah, neither did I.
But you have to shoot the cops.
I shot at the cops.
No, you have to kill the cops.
Nope.
If you want to get through that, yeah.
Nope.
I tried do it. Very hard.
It took a long time, but they eventually did it.
I always threw flashbangs.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
That's the way, right?
Because I just shot over their heads so the Russians would think I was being affected.
No. Doesn't work that way.
I was really role-playing my part.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any problem with shooting back at the cops. I mean, I've played plenty of, you know, cops and robbers games where you know, you shoot at cops. But that's, you know, them shooting, you know, you're shooting armed people, you're in combat, you're fighting, you know, it's kill or be killed. That's a different thing entirely. I still maintain that scene would have been just as effective in the plot and in making you think that the bad guy was really evil if it had just been a cutscene. I don't think that giving you like putting you in an interactive scene and not giving you a choice of what to do, and not really giving you a choice of what to do. I mean, you can shoot or not shoot. You can do something despicable or do nothing. That's not much of it. That's not a fun choice. And for me, gaming is all about having interesting choices.
It did sort of have a cool payoff though at the end of the level. I mean, not that you didn't see it coming, but.
I mean, that could have been a cutscene. There's no, and the end,
know,
end
kind
part
of made
was
it,
a cutscene.
It kind of like drew it out so much, and then all of a sudden, I don't know. It maybe made it a little bit more impactful. I think maybe.
I mean, maybe. I think for me, like it's so hard to isolate that level because within the context of the game, it just doesn't fit at all for me. I mean,
no, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't make sense really either.
Seconds earlier, Eric and I were kind of talking about this at lunch, how much the game oscillates between characters and there's very little continuity. But you're on a snowmobile chase before you're, you know, seconds before you're supposed to experience this supposedly moving and like, or like challenging emotional scene. It's like, just write it well.
You guys just risk their lives to steal some data. I'm going to ask a lot more of you. Now go shoot civilians.
I know.
It would have been good to have like at least one lead-in mission where you're working with those guys, you know, doing something not as objectionable, you know, like fighting like troops, and then going from that, it's like you would kind of feel yourself being embedded with those guys and like, okay, and maybe if they're doing something that's just not that bad, maybe they're fighting other terrorists, so you would start to identify with them, and then they go in and mow people down, and they're like, oh, holy crap, these guys are evil. Yeah. And that would have been more effective, although it still wouldn't have to be interactive.
There's no context and there's no gravitas. I mean, in the same way that you're expressing.
But anyway, moving on from that, because that's a horse we've pretty thoroughly flogged at this point.
Yeah.
Moving on to some future games, upcoming games. We've got the BioShock 2 Special Edition has, you know, first of all, it's been confirmed with for the PC. That's a nice change from, in contrast to the Modern Warfare 2 Special Edition that came with the night vision goggles that wasn't available on PC. The BioShock 2 Special Edition has been confirmed for the PC. Among the goodies that come with it, it comes with a soundtrack CD. It comes with, I think another little figurine like the first one did, but it also comes with an LP of the soundtrack. So an actual record, a vinyl record. Is that appealing to anybody? I mean, do you have to be, you know, over 35 to want that?
Very hipsterish.
It's only appealing to me if the sleeve art is exclusive to that and kind of interesting looking.
That is a good way to put it.
Well, I mean, in that case, wouldn't you just want the sleeve art and not the actual record?
Well, then it's kind of like an artifact of the game that symbolizes the era of the game, and you can sort of display it. And if it isn't just the box art on that, you know, kind of splash on there recklessly.
But, I love the original BioShock's music. It's just so atmospheric, and there is something. I think it adds an additional level of just I don't want to say fanboyism. It makes you feel
a crowd pleaser.
It makes you feel really special about the game if you can experience the music in like a more authentic way, which an LP would be.
How many people here? Quick show of hands. Who has a record player?
I do not.
Nope.
I'm raising my hand.
Really? So that's
not one. At home. I don't have one in California.
But I mean, I haven't owned a record since I was like four years old. So yeah. That's a really outdated technology. I mean, I kind of get the appeal of it, but it's not something that makes me want the game more. It's not something that makes me want the collector's edition.
Would you have proposed perhaps a night vision dive suit?
Yeah, if you can see underwater in the dark.
A breathing suit, yeah. You can breathe underwater.
Yes. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, smart. If it comes with scuba gear.
Okay.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
I want a knife with Assassin's Creed.
Another upcoming game, Star Trek Online. They just put out a barrage of trailers online. I know Eric and Evan, you've watched them. Andy or Norm, have you seen them?
Yes, I have. And I'm gonna quickly pimp out something because I'm working on the story right now. If you go to MaximumPC.com, I have a really good interview with the executive producer of Star Trek Online, where he talks about all the gameplay details
and
giving away a few codes.
Oh, cool. Beta. Yeah, we gave some of those away on our Facebook page not too long ago. People were thrilled about those. So I expect a big response for you on that one, Norm. But the videos, what were your guys' impressions of the videos? Were you impressed or was it meh?
The newest video was focused on space combat, and I think that's a smart way for them to sell the game because the space combat is going to be the best part of the game.
Agreed. It does look pretty badass. Eric, what did you think? Eric, are you a Star Trek fan? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll admit I never got much into the original series. That's kind of like way before my time. But I watched a lot of Next Gen and Voyager, Deep Space Nine growing up. And to me, like, yeah, Norm kind of hit it on the head. I think they're doing it exactly right because the space combat not only looks cool, but it sets them apart. I've seen, you know, some of the ground mission stuff, and I know it's not final, but to me it looked like it needs some work. But the space combat, you know, you have directional shields, and you have phasers, and you have torpedoes, and it's so very Star Trek, which is nice.
I mean, isn't it interesting that we're talking about an MMO and the thing we're most excited about is unique gameplay?
Well, I don't know if you can call it completely unique. I know, like,
a lot of people are kind of bitching on the forums, the Shack News forums at least, that In the video where they talk about space combat, they explicitly call like the ships, one is a tank and one, they didn't necessarily say a mage, but they say like DPS and, you know, things that are, tropes are definitely coming, that came out of Warcraft. World of Warcraft. So,
well, not necessarily out of Warcraft, but out of the MMO genre. I mean, there were tanks and stuff before Warcraft.
Sure, but so explicitly labeled, and people are a little concerned about that.
I personally think they're overreacting for two reasons. Number one,
we're not going to see, you know, healing beams come out of, you know, the science ship.
Right? You might.
I think what will most likely be, and actually they talked about this, is you can send shuttles over using crew, because crew is what determines health, hull regen, how much crew you have. And you lose crew when you send shuttles over, and so maybe you could send some repair crews over.
By the way, that was Gary Steinman contributing to the podcast there.
Cool.
anyone's keeping track. But I mean, like, technically, is there a big difference between a shuttle and a beam? I mean, it's a graphical difference.
Well, beam feels more like a quick fix and a little more analogous to a spell in terms of like the visual effect. But
right, that's like visually, it's different, definitely. But yeah. I mean, in terms of gameplay,
nanobots are the answer.
You know, they also announced that the game is coming out early February. I think February 8th or 1st.
February 2nd.
February 2nd. That's close. But there will be an open beta, first come, first serve, in January.
That's also big news. But I don't think that the class distinction that they're drawing there is really a cause for concern that this is going to play like every other MMO out there. For a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, Evan and I got to play it a couple months ago, and it really didn't feel anything like World of Warcraft to me. I mean, the fact that you're moving all the time and your target is moving all the time and you're hammering on, or you're trying to line up to hammer on one shield at a time and keep your strong shields towards the target. That gameplay right there is nothing at all like any MMO I've ever played. Though I've never played like Eve or like I think Auto Assault was called out as having having facing in combat, but I mean that gameplay right there is dramatically different than most other MMOs you'll play.
Which is why we're talking about it. Honestly, like, I mean, that's a large reason why we're very interested. I mean, I walked away from that demo you mentioned saying to you, I think, I mean, I would just play the space game portion of this game even if it didn't have any multiplayer. I would spend some time with it and enjoy it.
Yeah, it's like the closest analog I can think of is it's very much like Starfleet Command in a lot of ways, except you have more RPG-like abilities, you know, like special powers for that you can gain.
Yeah, or Star Trek Legacy to some extent.
Legacy was more arcadey. You didn't have any like special abilities really, and it kind of sucked. But
yeah, it did.
Yeah. But this one is, you know, it's definitely RPG flavored. It's in terms of the abilities that you have, and less arcadey. And it's like Starfleet Command in the energy management, the shield facings. Because you're also prioritizing your energy distribution between shields, engines, weapons, and auxiliary, which is like your special ability power well. So there's more to it than. You know, it's not a reskinned World of Warcraft is my point. The other thing about the classes that I think is, you know, people might be overreacting to a little bit, is I think that actually in Star Trek, you know, being a huge Star Trek nerd myself, I think that a lot of these ships do fit into those classifications pretty well. I mean, not uniformly. I mean, a lot of Federation ships in particular, I'm going to get really nerdy right now. Federation ships in particular are usually shown as like a jack of all trades kind of thing, with the exception of the Defiant, which is, you know, strictly a warship and offensively oriented. If they were to actually do that in a game and have them all be able to do everything, that would not be very interesting gameplay. There would be no real reason to work together. And, you know, it's kind of a tried and true, gameplay, you know, MMO gameplay thing to have different classes working together to maximize their abilities, which you could say is, you know, the same old thing, but I don't really, because of the changes in gameplay, it doesn't really strike me that way in this case.
But, what do you think about the lack of consequences when your ship is blown up and you got to automatically respawn? I mean,
I'm
not a big fan of that.
Yeah, I mean, it is very casually. I personally, I do like a little bit of consequence to death in my games. I don't want too much. I don't want to be, you know, like really pissed off every time I die. It's like, oh, I've got to, like in a fantasy MMO, I don't have to walk, you know, 5 minutes to get back to where I'm going.
You have
going.
To go back to your debris field. It's a corpse run.
That would be really obnoxious. Yeah. Corpse runs are annoying.
But the thing is, with Star Trek Online, you can have multiple ships. So as you upgrade ships, you don't lose your old ships. You can switch to your first class ship and your best ship and spec them out differently. I'd be happier if, you know, if you, there's incentive to leave a battle if you're losing and flee rather than to stay there or die and then come back.
Yeah.
Right. I agree with that. I think that the respawn thing is catering a little bit too much to the player who just wants to jump in and play and not worry about consequences at all.
Well, because it'll also be a console game. I mean, that's their plan.
Well, yeah, they plan to put it on consoles eventually, just like Champions Online, but they've announced no specific plan to do that. So for now, it's PC exclusive. But I mean, it's you know, you hear a lot of debate with designers about how much do they want to punish players for death, and you know, some people, and I guess death punishment has really kind of fallen out of favor in recent years, just because they do want to make these games accessible to a lot of people, and if you're not really really good at a game, you're gonna die, you know, a significant number of times, and dying sucks. Like being punished for dying sucks. You don't experiment as much. Try one thing until you try a bunch of things until you find one thing that works, and then you just stick to that. And you don't.
Or
you know,
they could design a game where you get new challenges, and your one thing doesn't always work. I mean, it could be a Demon's Souls.
Right, but then you're going to die a lot unless you really know what you're doing.
Well, that's why there's tutorials, and you know, that's why there are learning curves.
You're still going to have people dying more often that way. If people die a lot, then they get frustrated, they quit playing. And that's the last thing any MMO designer wants to have happen. They do not want you to stop playing their game. So, you know, it might annoy the hardcore, in that, you know, there is a loss of immersion there because you are not like, you know, it's like, oh, I died. Maybe that should have some effect. But I think they're more interested in drawing people in. It would be nice if they had like a hardcore server. Although I guess they're not doing different servers in this. They're doing like one universe with, I guess similar to the way they've done Champions Online. Although I hope it's a little bit different. With the zones where they have a bunch of instance versions of the same area. So there are never more than, you know, like 30 people in one instance. Which I don't like that. Because they made it in Champions Online, I didn't like it because it was too transparent. They didn't make it a smooth transition at all from one zone to another. It's like pick which version of the zone you want to go into. That I found was immersion breaking.
Yeah, I think just as a final aside, like having played Tor and like really
the Old Republic
and just really enjoying the way, you know, there's MMO gameplay. Yes, you know. Hitting things, getting loot, completing quests, but every 10 or 15 minutes, just breaking away from that camera angle and that interface that's kind of obtrusive to me, and having characters speak dialogue to you, and you know, having the camera be just cinematic for a few moments makes such a big difference to me. And I'm really hoping that either the lore is good enough or the mission design is interesting enough for me to want to read all that, you know, unvoiced text that's going to be in that game.
Right. Yeah, that's like the difference between the single player RPG experience and the MMO experience up to this point is the production value, because mostly because of the quantity of content that you have to produce in an MMO.
Like, of course, yeah.
It's a huge hurdle that BioWare is attempting to get over by voicing every single line of dialogue. But anyway, let's move on. We got a couple other things we want to cover, and we're running long. That almost never happens that we keep chatting. One thing I want to cover really quick is a research firm called John Petty Research this week sent out a press release saying that they're predicting that not only at the end of 2009, the PC gaming market, in terms of hardware mostly, that the market will have grown from a $20.07 billion industry into a $21.26 billion industry, which is a 6% growth. And then they go on to predict that in 2010, It will grow from $20.07 billion to $27 billion, which is a 30% increase. They attribute this to, quote unquote, higher than anticipated consumer demand for enthusiast performance and mainstream hardware, influenced by the ability to play video games ranging from casual to hardcore simulations. They also highlight Windows 7, DirectX 11, physics acceleration, stereo vision 3D, and the ability to use your PC for practical purposes while not playing games on it. I would love to believe this is true, that the PC gaming, the industry will show a 30% increase in 2010. Do you guys think that's realistic?
Gosh, I hope so. That's amazing. That's really good news.
Yeah, Norm, what do you think? I mean, you've got a closer eye on hardware than we do these days. Is there a higher than realistically expected demand for enthusiast performance and mainstream hardware?
I think you should always take analysis from John Petty research with a little bit of grain of salt. It's almost always very positive, and it's like how you can always find a psychologist with a PhD who can give you a legal testimony in those TV shows in your favor.
The industry is about guessing about the future, and this guy is marketing very positive guesses, and he wants you to buy his research report, which, you know, that's how he makes his living. So he wants to report some spectacular results.
I mean, there's educated guesses, but
I mean, this would be awesome, and it's pretty clear that the market for PC hardware, you know, is continuing to grow. Whether that's, you know, whether it's actually hardcore gaming hardware that's expanding at that rate is debatable. But I mean, the market is growing. It's pretty not really up for debate whether more PCs are being sold every year, and the market continues to grow even in an economic downturn. You know, there's still a lot of computer hardware being sold. But 30%, that might be a little high in the sky. So that's the good news about the future of PC gaming, the potentially good news. Bad news is, at the moment, you know, speaking of the economic downturn, EA just laid off a bunch of people, or at least told them they will be laid off as soon as they ship their games, including the team at Pandemic, who they acquired last year as part of the BioWare acquisition. They bought both BioWare and Pandemic at the same time. They're held by Elevation Partners, which very incestuously was founded by John Riccitiello, the current CEO of EA. He went from Elevation Partners to EA and then bought his old company.
Mm-hmm. And he made $5 million off that deal.
Yeah, it was an $800 million deal. He made a good chunk of change. And then a year later, they shutter Pandemic. That's kind of, well, I'm no business expert, but yikes. That's really sad news for those guys. I mean, they've been making PC games for a long time. They go back to, you know, Full Spectrum Warrior, Star Wars Battlefront.
Mm-hmm. Battlefront 2. I mean, Lord of the Rings Conquest was the last one they did.
Right. I mean, that one was it was basically a reskinning of Battlefront.
I mean, you've got to think all of those products. I mean, maybe even Saboteur, because I think it's been in development for a while before they were purchased. Like, they never really had a chance to create a new product, as far as I know.
I think they have two unannounced secret projects on their website that, you know, they probably worked on when they were picked up by EA. And how big was the studio? Like 200 people?
Yeah, the number we saw reported online was about 200 people laid off.
Right. I mean, you can't imagine that EA won't pick up some of those people to work in their LA studio.
Yeah, there are some reports that a few people from that studio, which was also located in Southern California, that they are being moved to EA LA, hopefully to, you know, continue to develop, support and develop DLC for Saboteur. So, and Saboteur, we will be reviewing that shortly. I just got the review copy in, but it's, that one's a World War II kind of open world game with some kind of parkour elements, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So that will be Pandemic's final game, which is kind of sad. Very sad, not kind of sad.
Yeah.
There are also reports that the Command & Conquer team, after they finish Command & Conquer 4, will also be given their walking papers by EA, which is also, you know, kind of a traumatic loss to PC gaming. And Command & Conquer is inherently a PC gaming franchise, even though, you know, it was...
I don't think that's the last we'll see of Command & Conquer, but...
No, I mean, they have said that they're, like, and for that matter, the Pandemic properties will continue to be developed in the future, but, you know, not under those brands.
We know that CNC 4 will be the, I mean, EA has made it clear that it will be the end of the CNC timeline, but Red Alert.
Well, the primary CNC timeline.
Yeah.
Red Alert is a different timeline. Generals is a different timeline. And you know, whatever else they want to start up under the CNC name.
Please don't bring back Generals. Leave that one.
I was going to say, yes, Generals. Oh, man. I love Generals, too.
A lot of people love Generals.
Yeah, really? I love Generals.
Yeah.
What was the next sort of Generals?
There wasn't one.
Yeah, it wasn't really one. It was just kind of a like a another
excuse to do 3D and then like special abilities and that guy from what's his from
I don't remember
Rocky Horror Picture Show. That guy.
Oh, Tim Curry.
Tim Curry yelling at you. Wasn't he in Generals?
No, he's in Red Alert 3.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. He's in all of them in my
I don't really remember the single player of Generals very well. I played a lot, played some of the multiplayer. I didn't
same here.
Spend
mostly
so much time with single player.
Multiplayer.
But yeah, hopefully, CNC isn't completely dead. Okay, well, one other quick thing, which was a shocking revelation that surprised us as Demigod players. Stardock just put out their annual report that give everybody a heads up on what they're doing. They say that only 23% of people who bought Demigod even tried to log in to play online, which is kind of ridiculous. Yeah, and from just having played that game a lot and having played the really meager single player options, compared to the awesome multiplayer in that game.
So this is just based on people who bought Demigod, like number of copies sold.
Yeah, they're comparing the number of copies sold to the number of individual people who logged in to play multiplayer.
Like on a regular basis, or just period?
No, ever. Ever.
Really?
Ever.
That is surprising, because Demigod had no copy protection, so if you wanted just to play single player, you could do that with a borrowed copy.
Yeah.
So copy XE.
Yeah.
And so you'd imagine a lot more people played Demigod than those who bought it or played online, and played online.
Right. I mean, it's just really shocking that 77%. Of people who bought the game, so more than three quarters of people who bought the game never played it online. That's absurd.
It's absurd, but at the same time, like, I know we really like got accustomed to the game and like developed a good skill set for it, and it helped that a lot of us were playing it simultaneously. But if one person with no Demigod friends, so to speak, tried the single player out and said, "Oh my gosh, this is really complicated. There's no tutorial," which we complained about earlier.
Right.
How am I going to cut it online? Like, what am I going to do? I don't even know what I'm doing. I can see that happening.
But Stardock says they've learned from the experience. They say our conclusion is that strategy games that we make and publish in the future will support multiplayer, but will not sacrifice the single player experience to do so. So they've learned, and like Sins of a Solar Empire, for example, didn't have much of a single player story. It just had
skirmishes though. Or,
skirmishes, yeah. It was kind of like Civilization.
Yeah.
But it wasn't designed really as a single player game.
Well, also, I mean, not to like beat a dead horse, but a lot of the things with Stardock was kind of hard, especially with Sins of a Solar Empire, to get a game going sometimes with your friends. Like, it didn't work a lot of the time.
Right, and they talk about that in the report as well, with Demigod saying that it took about 3 weeks to get that resolved, and they said that could have been avoided with a larger beta. So they've learned from that as well.
Mouse question for you guys. I just recently got the new Logitech G9X, and I love it. I love the best part is definitely adjusting the sensitivity on the fly. But I've got a question about how you guys set your mouse. For the longest time, I always thought having your sensitivity really high was the best for playing like shooters and stuff, until I went to a LAN party and played in the Counter-Strike tournament and got my ass kicked. But regardless, the people who were really, really good actually had like their sensitivity really far down. So just to turn around, they had to like fly their mouse across their mouse pad like six times. But Anyways, do you guys like to have your sensitivity like really high up so you barely have to move it, or do you like to have it really far down so you have really good precision?
Well, shooter fans, what do you think?
I use the G9X. I adore that mouse. I keep mine at, I think it's 5400 DPI, and then I'll adjust in-game mouse speed to where I want it to be, because I've found that when you have really high DPI, it seems like your mouse tends to do less wandering, at least in my experience, less software correcting, where it does like the straight line thing. And so I tend to leave, unless I'm using a sniper rifle, I tend to leave my DPI at full and use in-game settings to change what I want my normal setting to be.
So is your in-game setting high or low?
I don't know, maybe medium. I have seen people use much higher, and I've seen people use much lower than mine. Like in Steam games, for instance, it's like a 3.
All right. How about you, Evan?
I tend to be, I mean, in terms of like Left 4 Dead and Counter-Strike, like 8 to 10, sometimes 12, I don't know if it's that high. TF2 as well, I guess. I certainly echo, like at LAN parties especially, snipers are almost always incredibly, incredibly low, like 1 or 2 at the very most.
Right, because that gives you more precision, larger movement of your hand produces a smaller but more precise movement of the crosshairs on screen.
Yeah, I mean, depending on how you move, you almost have more increments that way. You can kind of think about it that way. And for me, like how I hold my mouse, I don't really slide it. I kind of like rotate at the base of it toward my palm with my thumb and my fingers. My palm doesn't really touch it. So it works for me.
I use the, the G5, and I set it to max sensitivity on the mouse, and then I turn down sensitivity in the game to not the lowest, but like the bottom quarter.
Pretty low.
I'd say the first 25%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the right way to do it.
We are insensitive, is the conclusion.
No. It's high sensitivity for the mouse. So it's very precise, but
right.
You still have to move the mouse.
All right, we got to wrap this show up real quick. So on to playlists. Let's do this rapid fire. Evan, what are you playing?
Finishing Modern Warfare 2 single player this weekend. Doing a bunch more scavenge with Norm, and Serious Sam next week.
Eric, how about you?
A lot of Modern Warfare 2 Spec Ops with Prentice, who has been swine flued.
do we know for sure he has swine flu, or is it?
I think he confirmed to me last night that it's H1N1. So
wow,
yeah, and Gyromancer, the new PopCap game, is so good.
Is it the one that Square made with them?
Yeah, Square Enix PopCap.
Yeah, the last thing we need is another super addictive PopCap gamer right here.
Talk, yeah.
Andy, how about you?
I just finished Modern Warfare 2's single player campaign, so now I'll probably dabble in the multiplayer, play some Left 4 Dead 2, and hopefully start Dragon Age.
Norm.
Modern Warfare 2, multiplayer, Left 4 Dead multiplayer. Still starting. First couple hours of Dragon Age. And I stopped playing Torchlight.
You stopped playing?
I stopped playing. It's not enough time, and also it's Diablo.
Norm hates Demigod. Norm hates Demigod. I mean,
no, Diablo. I love Demigod. I hate Diablo.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've stopped playing Torchlight too, just because I don't have time. I've been playing through a little bit of Modern Warfare. I've been playing through a little bit of Dragon Age, and I've also been playing the trying to get my computer to work game, which
that's a fun game.
Yeah, it turns out that combining a Radeon 5870 with an Asus P5N32-SLI motherboard is a recipe for pain and suffering. So it's some like hardware level conflict that causes all manner of hell. I was able to find a couple of other instances online of somebody else having that problem. So it seems to be specific to that motherboard. So don't freak out if you're thinking about that card, but I would recommend Googling around to see if anybody's had any problem combining that card with your particular motherboard before you buy it. And it could be something that'll be fixed in a firmware update though. I had to go back to my GTX 285. All right.
Poor baby.
Boo-hoo.
Poor baby.
It's tragic, I know. But all right, so let's wrap this the show up. We've got if you want to send us some questions for us to read next week. We're sorry we only got one this week, but we ran long as we discussed. I'd say you can call us at the number which Andy will now read.
Well, I haven't read in so long. I don't know what it is. 877-404-1337, extension 724, PCG.
And you can also email us an MP3 question with the format we prefer for clarity. You can email that to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. And you should also go to PCGamer.com to subscribe to our wonderful magazine. So for all of us here at PC Gamer, we bid you a fond farewell until next week.
You guys want to know what weapon in Left 4 Dead 2 has the highest DPS?
Sure.
Shotgun.
Well, no, Magnum.
Which?
Magnum.
DPS. Chainsaw, which, yeah.
Well, Chainsaw does 100 damage every tenth of a second. So,
holy
yes.
Crap.
But,
you're talking about firearm?
I'm guessing auto sniper?
No. Auto sniper is only 360 because it fires pretty slow.
I haven't seen all the weapons yet.
Scar.
Oh, I love the scars. Magnum.
The Scar isn't listed here. It is the auto shotgun because, you know, if it's divided into pellets, and that's like 1,687 damage. There's 11 pellets per shell, and they do 23 damage per.
Someone do math quickly. That's like 253 damage per shot.
Yeah.
And then how many shots?
That in my head.
Rate of fire is one shell per 0.15 seconds. Mm-hmm. Anyway. I'll forward
that's a fast shotgun.
Data to you if you're interested.
All right, back to the edit minds with us.
Yes. Yes.
Right. You guys.
Thanks, Norm.
Yep, thanks.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.